Got your Bibles, we are making our way to Genesis chapter 37. We're going to try and cover 13 chapters today, which would be miraculous for me. I struggle to get through 13 verses, never mind 13 chapters. But we're going to try and take a kind of a view from almost like a helicopter over the life of Joseph. We're kind of look down on his life and see that all that God did in the life of Joseph. I was reading this week about a story about Johann Sebastian Bach. Now, some of you who are musicians will know who he was. He was a great composer. And just before he died, Johann Sebastian Bach was still writing. And he wrote his last fuge, as it was called, a piece of music. But he didn't get to finish it. And so after Bach died, his son, of course, then going to look through his things and recovered this last piece of music that his father was writing. And he looked at it and studied it, and just like we've been doing on Sunday nights, just like the second letter to Timothy was Paul's last writing of a great man. So this was Bach's last piece of music before he died, so obviously it was pretty important. And so his son looked at the music and was trying to work out there was something different and strange about the music. And the more his son started to study this last piece of music that his father had wrote, he started to realize that his father had his name all over this piece of music. His name was Bach, so B-A-C-H. And as you looked at the music, he had literally written his name in the music. He would have the letter B, the note B, the note A, the note C, the note H. Then the next stanza would be the note B, the note A, the note C, and the note H. So literally, Bach had written his name into a piece of music. And so his son finished off the piece of music, and so it's still played today. And so Bach still lives today in his music. And as you read that music and you play that music, his name is all over it. And you know, when you read the scriptures, God's name is all over the scriptures. His music rings out. The very name of Christ is laced into the whole story of scripture. And even the story that we're going to look at this morning, we will see as we looked at last Sunday, Genesis chapter 12, that one day a blessing would come to the whole world. Genesis chapter 12, verse 3. And so even in this story of Joseph this morning, you will see that God is weaving and is part of every verse of Scripture. God was in control of the story. So if you're taking notes, the big theme this morning is this. God is with you when your world seems like it's falling apart. God is with you when your world seems like it's falling apart. In Genesis chapter 15, verse 13, after further fulfillment of the Abrahamic promise, then the Lord said to Abraham, "Know for certain that your descendants will be strangers in a country not their own, and they will be enslaved and mistreated for 400 years. But I will punish the nation they serve as slaves, and afterwards they will come out with great possessions. You, however, will go to your fathers in peace and be buried in a good old age." All of those promises that God gave to Abram years and years before are going to be fulfilled this morning in the story of Joseph. So what's the first point that comes from chapter 37, verses 2 to 36? Firstly, God was with Joseph in the pit. Firstly, God was with Joseph in the pit, and he is with you when you feel abandoned. God was with Joseph in the pit, and he is with you when you feel abandoned yourself. Look at Genesis chapter 37, verse 1. Jacob lived in the land where his father had stayed, the land of Canaan. And this is the account of Jacob. Joseph, a young man of 17, was tending the flocks with his brothers. And the sons of Bilhah and the sons of Zilpah, his father's wives, and he brought their father a bad report about them. Now, this is not a very wise idea. There were five Dodd brothers that came in this morning in the back, and I'm sure you've never brought a bad report about one of your brothers. Well, in this story, Joseph got into trouble right from the start. Verse 3, "Now Israel loved Joseph more than any of his other sons, because he had borne to him in an old age, and he made a richly ornamented robe for him. And when his brothers saw that their father loved him more than any of them, they hated him and could not speak a kind word about him." This paternal favoritism riled the brothers right from the start. Who is this young boy that he thinks that he can get the favoritism of our father? And so the hatred and the revenge starting to brood in the lives of the brothers. He got to give him a robe, a tunic of many colors, or perhaps a sleeve coat that reached to the wrists on the bottom and the arms and to the ankles. But it set Joseph apart from the rest of his brothers. Abraham had set Joseph apart and his brothers couldn't handle it. And then he gives them his dream. Look at verse 5. So things aren't going well here. And then listen to this, it makes things worse. Verse 5, Joseph had a dream. And when he told it to his brothers, they hated him all the more. And he said to them, listen to the dream I had. We were binding sheaves of grain out in the field, and suddenly my sheaf rose up and stood upright while your sheaves gathered around mine and bowed down to it. His brothers said to him, do you intend to reign over us? Will you actually rule us? And they hated him all the more because of his dream and what he had said. You can imagine the chit-chat amongst the brothers as they made their way back to the house. Who on earth does this young upstart of a younger brother think that he is to say this to us? We knew he was prideful. We knew he was an upstart. But this is beyond a joke. But then here comes another dream, verse 9. Then Joseph had another dream. And he told it to his brothers. Listen to me, he said. I had another dream. And this time the sun and the moon and the 11 stars were bowing down to me. When he told his father as well as his brothers, his father rebuked him and said, what is this dream you had? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow down to the ground before you, Joseph? His brothers were jealous of him, but his father kept the matter in mind. Now his brothers, verse 12, had gone to graze their father's flocks near Shechem. And Israel said to Joseph, as you know, your brothers are grazing the flocks near Shechem. Come, I am sending you to them. Very well, Joseph replied. So he said to them, go and see if all is well with your brothers, with all the flocks, and bring a word back to me. Then he sent them off from the valley of Hebron. And when Joseph arrived at Shechem, a man found him wandering around in the field and asked him, what are you looking for? He replied, I'm looking for my brothers. Can you tell me where they're grazing their flocks? They've moved out from here, the man answered. And I heard them say, Let's go to Dothan. So Joseph went after his brothers and found them near Dothan. Verse 18, but they saw Joseph in a distance. And before he reached them, they plotted to kill him. Here comes the dreamer, they said to each other. Come now, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns and say that a ferocious animal devoured him. Then we'll see what comes of his dreams. When Reuben heard this, he tried to rescue him from their hands. Let's not take his life, he said. Don't shed any blood. Throw him into the cistern here in the desert, but don't lay a hand on him. Reuben said this to rescue him from them and take them back to his father. So when Joseph came to his brothers, they stripped him of his robe, the richly ornamented robe that he was wearing. They took him and threw him into the cistern. Now the cistern was empty and there was no water in it. And as they sat down to eat their meal, they looked up and saw a caravan of Ishmaelites coming from the Gilead. Their camels were loaded with spices, balm, and myrrh. And there they were on their way to take them down to Egypt. Isn't it interesting that here, as this story starts to unravel, they say that we'll just say to our father that a wild beast came and took away your son, but really the beast was within them. The evil was within the brothers. And then they sat down to eat a dinner as if all was well. They've got rid of their brother because the anger and the hatred that had been bubbling up in their family life was so bad they no longer cared for their brother. And I want to ask you, do you see any of your own family in this? Because as we come to church this morning, all of our families in one way or another are dysfunctional. All of us have things in our lockers. All of us have things in our family's life which we keep hidden and we try to suppress and we try to put them away. But at one time in this story, the anger and the jealousies now in the brothers is coming out in the killing of their own brother. Only God wouldn't allow them to kill him. Look at verse 26. Judah said to his brothers, what will we gain if we kill our brother and cover up his blood? Come, let's sell him to the Ishmaelites and not lay our hands on him. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood. And his brothers agreed. If you look at the first word of verse 26, the brother called Judah. Who was Jesus Christ, the Lion of the tribe of Judah? See, God's hand is interwoven the whole way through this story. Just like Bach was interwoven through his music and his last piece, so as we study this story together, watch God's hand of sovereignty as he's controlling each part of this story to bring about his own good purpose. And for Joseph, it seemed like his world was falling apart and that his dream that God had given to him was shattered and it lay in ruins, but God was still there. His hand was still all over his situation. I want to say to you this morning, if your dreams feel like they've fallen apart, God's still there. And you'll see that in the life of Joseph. Verse 28, so when the Midianite merchants came by, his brother pulled Joseph up out of the cistern and sold him for 20 shekels of silver to the Ishmaelites, who took him to Egypt. They didn't take him to Northern Ireland. They didn't take him to France. They took him to Egypt. Why? Because God's hand is all over this story. Verse 29, when Reuben returned to the cistern and saw that Joseph was not there, he tore his clothes and he went back to his brothers and said, "The boy isn't there. What can I turn to now?" And when they got Joseph's robe, they slaughtered a goat and dipped the robe in blood. They took the ornamented robe back to the father and said, "We find this. Examine it to see whether it is your son's robe." Jacob recognized it and said, "It is my son's robe. Some ferocious animal has devoured him." It wasn't an animal, it was the brothers. "Joseph has surely been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes, put on sackcloth and mourned for his son many days. All his sons and daughters came to comfort him, but Jacob refused to be comforted. "No," he said, "in the morning will I go down to the grave with my son." Meanwhile, verse 36, the Midianites sold Joseph to Potiphar, one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard. Put yourself in the multicolored tunic of Joseph. God's given you a dream. He's given you a plan for your life. You know that it's God that's spoken to you. And here you're now on this bandwagon on the way to Egypt. Your brothers have tried to kill you. There's been this debate whether he should be killed or not. He's been thrown down to a pit and suddenly his dreams seems shattered. Can you identify with Joseph this morning? In your own life? With your own dreams? In spite of all the sin and deception that is going on in this story, God is still working to bring all things together for good. Joseph thought that God had abandoned him, that his brothers had taken control, but God's hand is wrapped all around this situation and this story. Perhaps you feel like God's abandoned you in the pit of life at the moment. It's dark down there. Your situation this morning feels like there's no hope. That there's no way back. You're on this bandwagon and you're being taken out of control and God is not going to bring you back. But I tell you, there's many men and women of God in the Scripture and who have lived through church history who have felt like that. Paul in the New Testament in 2 Corinthians 4 verse 7 said this, "But we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the all-surpassing power is from God and not from us." You see, Paul knew and Joseph knew that it was God who was working in them in the midst of their struggles, stresses, and trials. 2 Corinthians 4 verse 8, Paul says, "We are hard pressed on every side, but we're not crushed. We're perplexed, but we're not in despair. We're persecuted, but we're not abandoned. We're struck down, but not as destroyed." Paul saying, there was many times in my life when I felt that the lights had gone out. God had abandoned me. Paul was beaten times without number. He was left for dead. He was left shipwrecked. But every time God had his hand on the situation, even when Paul's dreams seemed like they were falling apart. Perhaps your life feels like that, just like at a football match at halftime, when the lights go out, you can't see anybody. You're praying that God would turn the lights back on and he would show you the way forward. But God had his hand wrapped all around this situation. Romans 8 verse 31 says to some of you this morning who are struggling. What then shall we say in response to this? If God is for us, who can be against us? You see, all of Joseph's brothers were against him. All of his family was against him, apart from his older brother and his father. But God was for him. He who did not spare his own son, but gave him up for us all, how will he not also along with him graciously give us all things? That is the God who you and I worship this morning. So God was with Joseph in the pit, and he's with you when you feel abandoned. But secondly, chapter 39, God was with Joseph in the house of Potiphar. God was with Joseph in the house of Potiphar. Look at chapter 39, verse 1. Now Joseph had been taken down to Egypt. God's providence. God is in control. Potiphar, an Egyptian who was one of Pharaoh's officials, the captain of the guard, brought him from the Ishmaelites who had taken him there. Look at verse 2 and marinate in these words. Listen to how often God is mentioned now in the story. And think about how this applies to your life and how God is involved in your story, even if your dreams feel like they've been shattered. Look at verse 2. The Lord was with Joseph and he prospered. And he lived in the house of his Egyptian master. Verse 3. When his master saw that the Lord was with him and that the Lord gave him success in everything he did, Joseph found favor in Pharaoh's eye or in Potiphar's eyes and became his attendant. Potiphar put him in charge of his household, and he entrusted to his care everything he owned. From the time he put him in charge of his household and all that he owned, the Lord blessed the household of the Egyptians. Why? Because of Joseph. The blessing of the Lord was on everything Potiphar had, both in the house and in the field. So he left Joseph's care to look after everything with Joseph in charge. And he did not concern himself with anything except the food that he ate. We need to rewind back the tape to last Sunday morning sermon. We're in Genesis chapter 12. Remember it says in verses 1 to 3 that anyone who blesses you, I will bless. Wherever you go, Abraham, and your descendants go, whoever blesses you and your seed, they will be blessed. And here is Potiphar, this Egyptian man who doesn't know the true and living God. He's blessing Joseph. Joseph is a blessing to him. God is working in this situation. And suddenly Potiphar receives the blessing of God. Blessing on his household. You see, God was with Joseph. And I can tell you this morning, even if your dreams feel like they're shattered and they're falling apart, God is with you this morning. Joseph would have gone and he would have been one of the outdoor slaves, and he was then brought indoors, which was more of a status symbol to be a servant indoors. Then he's put in charge of the whole household. Joseph is experiencing blessing here. For the first time in the story, he's starting to feel blessing. But what comes in the moment of Joseph's blessing comes temptation. Look at verse 6. Now Joseph was well built and handsome. And after a while, his master's wife took notice of Joseph and said, Joseph, come to bed with me. But Joseph refused. With me in charge, he told her, my master does not concern himself with anything in the house. Everything he owns, he's entrusted to my care. Then let's pause as we read verse 9. And I can tell you personally, when I read verse 9 in my study on Thursday, it sent a shudder down my spine. Verse 9. No one is greater in this house than I am. My master has withheld nothing from me except you, because you are his wife. How then could I do such a wicked thing and sin against God? That sent shudders down my spine this week as a young man. God has blessed me with everything. God, through Potiphar's hand, has given me everything in this house. And this is the one thing that he's told me not to go near. And I'm just so amazed at Joseph's relationship with a living God that even in the moment of blessing, if there was ever a time where he says, my family have tried to kill me. Nobody knows me out here. If I do this, I'll probably get away with it. In fact, you're Potiphar. He's given me everything in the house. Surely I can do this. Nobody will notice. God doesn't really care, surely, about this. But there was no debate. Joseph refused to lie down with Potiphar's wife. What a challenge to you and I this morning in the moment of our temptation. Joseph enjoyed the presence and the blessing of God more than he would have enjoyed a few fleeting moments with Potiphar's wife. He wanted to treasure his relationship with the God of this universe and treasure that more than he could have with a few moments with Potiphar. But what was her response? Was God going to bless Joseph for his blessing towards God and standing up for God? One day he went into the house to attend his duties, and none of the household servants were inside. Potiphar's wife caught him by the cloak, verse 12, and said, come to bed with me. But he left his cloak in her hand and ran out of the house. Verse 13, when she saw that he had left his cloak in her hand and had run out of the house, she called her household servants. Look, she said to them, this Hebrew has been brought to us to make sport of us. He came in here to sleep with me, but I screamed. When he heard me scream for help, he left his cloak beside me and ran out of the house. She kept his cloak beside her until his master came home. Then she told him this story. That Hebrew slave you brought us came to make sport of me, but as soon as I screamed for help, he left his cloak beside me and he ran out of the house. And when his master heard the story, his wife told him, saying, this is how your slave treated me. And he burned with anger. See how the story is going? Joseph stands for God. He rises up to prominence. Then people get jealous of him and the anger burns against him. Verse 20, Joseph's master took him and put him in prison, the place where the king's prisoners were confined. Maybe in your workplace. Maybe in your family. Maybe there's areas of in your life this morning where you're being tempted. And I would urge you, from God's words, through the life and testimony of Joseph, to resist temptation. No temptation has overcome you to such that is common to man, but God will provide a way of escape. And I would urge you, as I sat there in my study and felt this weight on my own life, that you would stand with Joseph and resist temptation, because God is with you. If there ever was a man or a situation where Joseph could have chose to let down his guard with no one around, nobody knew his name, it was then. 1 Peter chapter 2 verse 20 talks about others who suffer for doing what is right and good. 1 Peter 2 verse 20 says, but if you suffer for doing good and you endure it, this is commendable before God. To this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. So Joseph is thrown into prison. He's called to suffer unjustly. But thirdly, God was with Joseph in the palace. Chapters 40 to 41. God was with Joseph in the palace. So Joseph is thrown into prison. Potiphar has got rid of this guy. But it's interesting that if you were accused of rape in this culture, you would have immediately been killed. And I think that as I was reading the story, that perhaps Potiphar had seen enough of God's presence in the life of Joseph that he knew that Joseph was the real deal. And so his wife comes to him and says, this Hebrew slave who you've brought to me has done this. And immediately his anger burns. But perhaps in the moment he's thinking, is this really true? Do I trust my wife, or do I trust Joseph, the man who I've seen the true and living God working through? So he doesn't kill him, but he throws him in prison. And so as Joseph gets to prison, suddenly he meets these two men. And he's going to have to choose to stand for God. Can you imagine what it was like for Joseph, and his dreams were falling apart? Do you think he even would have remembered his dreams? Do you remember the things we read at the start in chapter 37? That God, everyone was going to bow down to him. Do you think he's forgotten about this dream? Do you think perhaps at this stage, now that he's now in prison, that God is really going to forget about him now? Chapter 40, verse 1. Sometime later, the cupbearer and the baker of the king of Egypt offended their master, the king of Egypt. Pharaoh was angry with his two officials, the cupbearer and the chief baker, and put them in custody in the house of the captain of the guard in the same prison where Joseph was confined. The captain of the guard then assigned them to Joseph. You see God's hand in this situation. He could have gone to any prison. He could have not been a slave in Potiphar's house, but yet Potiphar was the captain of the guard who looked after the prison which was associated with Pharaoh, the god of Egypt. And God has his hand laced through every single part of this story. And I would urge you as you look at your own story this morning that God has got his hand even if you can't see it. Even if you can't see it and you feel like the lights are out this morning, God's got his hand on the situation. Verse 6, when Joseph came to them the next morning, he saw that these two men were dejected. So he asked Pharaoh's officials who were in custody with him in the master's house, "Why are your faces so sad today?" Said Joseph, "We both had dreams," they answered. "But there's no one to interpret them." Then Joseph said to them, "Do not interpretations belong to God? Tell me your dreams." So the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, both they, as you read the story, they both tell their stories to Joseph. But you know the thing is, in this story, the chief cupbearer and the chief baker, they forgot Joseph. And you may feel this morning as you read these verses that God has forgotten you. And here's Joseph, he reveals this dream to these two men, and both of them, one it ends in exaltation and one it leads in death. And he's saying, "Will you remember me after I've told you these stories? Will you come back? Because I'm an innocent man in here. Will you come back and will you rescue me?" But he had put his trust in humans. But as we'll see, it is God that will rescue Joseph. It was God who will exalt him at the proper time. Reminds me of the life of Jesus. And as you read the story of Joseph, you see parallel after parallel. Joseph sold as a slave. Joseph was an innocent man. Joseph resisted temptation. Joseph was imprisoned. And all of that you see in the life of Jesus Christ. A sinless man. Came not to be served, but to serve. Thrown into a prison. In a kangaroo court. And he went to a cross. And Philippians chapter 2 verse 6 says this, "Who though Jesus being in the very nature God, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped, but he made himself nothing, taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, and being found in the appearance of a man, he humbled himself and became obedient to death, even death on a cross," and the lights were out. This whole seed line promise from Genesis chapter 12, that through your seed, Abraham, all the nations of the earth will be blessed. And then Jesus comes thousands of years later, and now he's hanging on the cross and he's finished. The lights are out. God turned his face away. Jesus on the cross, hanging, dead. Was that it finished for Jesus? Was that it finished for us? Had God abandoned us then? You read Philippians 2 verse 9, hear the rest of the story. "Therefore God exalted him." Who was it exalted him? It was God. God exalted him to the highest place and gave him the name that is above every name, that at the name of Jesus every knee should bow in heaven and on earth and under the earth, and every tongue confess that Jesus Christ is Lord. Is that not good news this morning? That in your situation that you face this morning, that we don't worship a God that died on the Friday and that was it, and that the lights have gone out and your situation was over. No, we worship a God this morning who has risen from the dead. And that your situation, as bad as it seems, and it feels like a broken window shattered all over the floor, that God, because he's alive, can bring it together and he can restore it again. And to us that looks impossible. But with man, all things are impossible. With God, all things are possible in the life of Jesus and in the life of Joseph. Let's accelerate through the text. Let's get to chapter 45. A lot goes on in this story. I would love to have all lunchtime and afternoon to talk it through with you, but Isaac would be asleep and you would be asleep. Let's get to chapter 45. Then Joseph, a lot's going on here. He's revealed the dreams to Pharaoh. Pharaoh said, "This man's amazing. Is there not someone? There's no one greater than this man, Joseph, in whom the living God is here." He comes up to Pharaoh, who was said to be a god, and there he stands in Pharaoh's palace and tells him that it's the true and the living God that reveals dreams and mysteries. Then eventually, Joseph's family, they go back and forth to Egypt, and there's a whole struggle and trial between the family. And eventually, it comes to the moment where Joseph will unveil himself to his brothers. Look at chapter 45. Verse 1, "Then Joseph could no longer control himself before all his attendants. And he cried out, 'Have everyone leave my presence.' So there was no one with Joseph when he made Pharaoh known to his brothers. And he wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him." Perhaps some of you in your family life can identify with pent up anger, hurt, struggle. And at the moment where forgiveness and reconciliation come, you can identify with these words of Joseph. Verse 2. "And Joseph wept so loudly that the Egyptians heard him. And Pharaoh's household heard about it. And Joseph said to his brothers, 'I am Joseph. Is my father still living?' But his brothers were not able to answer him because they were terrified at his presence." Now, could you imagine what that must have been like for these brothers as they looked to this prime minister of Egypt, whom their life and their very breath lay in their hands, and they're bowing down before this man, and suddenly they realized that the one whose dreams they had tried to shatter, they had actually fulfilled. The dreams they had tried to shatter, in God's timetable, they had actually fulfilled. Joseph then offers them reconciliation and forgiveness. Chapter 45, verse 4, "Then Joseph said to his brothers, 'Come close to me.' And when they had done so, he said, 'I am your brother Joseph, the one you sold into Egypt. Remember me? And now do not be distressed and do not be angry with yourselves for selling me here, because it was to save lives that God sent me ahead of you.'" Oh, what a great God we have. Here is God in the most... it's a terrible situation. It couldn't get any worse for Joseph in the pit and in the prison of things that his lights had gone out. But it was God that sent me here to save many lives. Verse 6, "For 2 years now there's been a famine in the land. And for the next 5 years there will be plowing and reaping. But God sent me ahead of you to preserve for your remnant on the earth and to save your lives a great deliverance." Oh, and I love these words in verse 8. "So then it was not you. So then it was not you who sent me here, but God. He made me father to Pharaoh, lord of his entire household, and ruler of Egypt." What a lovely picture of forgiveness. Wonder in your life this morning, is there someone you need to forgive? And you say, "Johnny, it's too hard for me. You don't know what's in our closet, in our family. You don't know all that's gone on." Well, I would urge you, not based on my life, but on the life of Joseph and on the life of Jesus Christ, two innocent men who offered forgiveness. Joseph to his family. Joseph pointing to God, that it was God's presence and it was God's plan that was going to work out blessing out of this shattered dream. Or Jesus Christ, the most innocent God-man. He died on the cross and he says, "Father, forgive them because they have no clue what they're doing." If you need to forgive this morning, I would urge you to look to the life of Jesus Christ, the innocent one, who paid the penalty for the whole world. Let's fast forward to the end of the tape. Genesis chapter 50, verse 15. How is this all going to work out? The book of Genesis in chapter 1 and 2 talk about creation. The end of Genesis in chapter 50 finishes with a coffin with Jacob, who was in the line of Abraham, being taken back to Canaan to fulfill the promise that he would be buried in the land of his fathers. And for 48 chapters, as you read the book of Genesis, as we've been reading it as a church, isn't it amazing that most of it is a biography about God's dealing with the lives of people? And I can assure you it's the same God this morning. God dealing with broken lives. God bringing goodness and blessing out of shattered lives. If you read the whole book of Genesis, you see one problem after the other, one family issue after another. But what does God have to say about this broken family and this broken situation? Genesis chapter 50, verse 15. When Joseph's brothers saw that their father was dead, started to worry. What if Joseph holds a grudge against us? What if he wants to pay us back for all the wrongs we did to him? So they sent word to Joseph. Your father left these instructions before he died. As I was reading this week, I'm not sure if this was true or if this was a lie. Verse 17, this is what you are to say to Joseph. I ask you to forgive your brothers the sins and the wrongs they committed in treating you so badly. Now please forgive the sins of your servant of God, your father. How do you think Joseph was going to react to this? If this happened in your family, would you still be jealous and angry and in a rage and holding bitterness? What did Joseph do? Verse 17, when their message came to him, Joseph wept. His brothers then came and threw themselves down before him. Remember the dream, chapter 37, that his brothers would come and would bow down to him. His brothers came and threw themselves down before him. We are your slaves, they said. But Joseph said to them, don't be afraid. I am in the place of God. And then these words that echo out through Scripture, verse 20. You intended evil. In the NIV it says harm. You intended harm against me. But God intended it for good. How do we reconcile that as believers this morning? You intended to harm me, but God intended it for good to accomplish what is being done, the saving of many lives. So then, don't be afraid. I will provide for you and your children. What a lovely picture of forgiveness. Unconditional forgiveness. I wonder, do you need to use that this morning? Unconditional forgiveness. Because you this morning, as you come to church, your salvation this morning came through your sin, and God, through Jesus Christ, offered you unconditional forgiveness. No matter what you do as a Christian this morning, God unconditionally forgives you. Jesus, the one who died for you, he was innocent. And it's amazing that Jesus would come from the tribe of Judah. This whole story was not just about Joseph. This whole story was about you and I this morning. That through the tribe of Judah, that one day Jesus himself would come from that very tribe. And that at the very end, we're studying the book of Genesis, but at the very end of the Bible, in the book of Revelation, it says this in Revelation 5, verse 5, then one of the elders said to me, do not weep, see the Lion of the tribe of Judah. The root of David has triumphed. Whether you feel abandoned this morning, whether you feel the lights have gone out, whether you feel that God is never going to exalt you at his proper time, I want to tell you this morning, no matter what situation you find yourself in this morning, that the Lion of the tribe of Judah has triumphed. And there's nothing that can separate you from the love of Christ this morning. There's nothing, no family situation, no personal struggle this morning that Jesus Christ has not triumphed over. And I would urge you as we come to pray in just a moment to bring it before him. Because he is the one. Jesus Christ is the one who's triumphed.